Welcome, everyone, to episode 414 of the NBA podcast. I'm Morten Jensen, and today we'll be discussing the trade deadline. Surprise, surprise. This has been a theme for the last couple weeks, but here we are 24 hours out, even less than that, actually. So before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. We're on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, and leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a guy who will be spending a lot of time on Locker Room tomorrow, Keith Smith. You will have, if I understand it correctly, a four-hour room here on the app.
That is the plan, Mort. We are going to go for 4 hours from noon Eastern to 4 Eastern. We'll get up to and then past the NBA trade deadline and get into everything that's going on and happening. And hopefully we'll be reacting to a whole lot of stuff live. That'll be a lot of fun.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it. And also, just to plug my own stuff, I will be doing a three-hour live stream on the YouTube channel called The NBA Show. I'll have a couple guests on here and there, one permanent guest on in terms of Rich Stamen, as you know him from NBA Twitter, at Mavs Draft. So we'll be covering the trade deadline for 3 hours, and hopefully we have a couple guests popping in and out. So that is also happening. A lot of coverage, because you know what, Keith? Let's just call it what it is. NBA trade deadline is pretty much our Christmas. I mean, Christmas has really turned, the real Christmas has turned into an event for the kids. This is for us.
Yeah, man, I like the way you put that. That is absolutely true. It's I like to think the NBA has some tentpole moments that if you ask me, I'll give a different answer. I'll say, you know, at that time, that's my favorite time of the year. But trade deadline, NBA draft, the opening couple days of free agency, and then of course the actual tip off of the season, because usually by then I've been missing it because it's been gone for so many months. This year that felt a little bit different, because everything happened in the span of about 15 to 20 minutes, it felt like. So that was a little different. But yeah, I, no doubt. This is, it's right up there. It's, 1A, 1B, 1C, however you want to rank it. For me, I absolutely love this time of year.
Yeah, totally agreed. So let's get into it. And of course, we got to start with one of the biggest names out there that's been brought up over and over and over again, Aaron Gordon. And it does seem that he and the Boston Celtics have mutual interest. Of course, we just got through the Vooch and Lowe show on ESPN, and Adrian Wojnarowski hinted that Aaron Gordon's trade request, he might actually be having second thoughts about that, which opens the door to a potential Orlando Magic, I don't even want to call it return, but just a know-nothingness, because he's going to stick around there if that happens. But I'm still on that fence calling, or I'm still on that side basically saying Boston should be his landing spot. I think he would be fantastic there. So, Keith, you are a guy who watch a lot of Celtics. What can Aaron Gordon bring them? And also, what would the right deal be? There are obviously a couple rumors floating about. So give us the full scoop here on Aaron Gordon, Celtics, trade, impact, the whole shebang.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, and Woj kind of hinted at this during that show, that when it is, when you hear with Aaron Gordon, or with the Celtics rather, sometimes it's hard to know how serious they are about a player. And I kind of put a tweet out that said, you know, hey, a lot of times when Boston, you hear a lot of stuff with them, it is, we don't end up, it doesn't end up coming to fruition. Usually their trades, which I know haven't happened in season in a number of years, their off-season trades kind of come out of nowhere. And it's like, oh, that came, we weren't expecting that. So I always have a little bit of wariness when I start to hear a lot. That said, this time it feels a little bit more real. Gordon, it is now, you know, very public knowledge. He didn't even, when he talked to Josh Robbins, who is the Orlando Magic beat writer for The Athletic, Gordon had every opportunity to walk back that trade request. but he didn't do it. He basically said, you know, when you're frustrated because of losing and all these other things, without ever saying, yes, I made a trade request, he also certainly did not say, I did not make a trade request. I should phrase it that way. So I think that is a little bit more real. As for Boston, I'll go over what I think they should do. I have no problem with giving up 2 first-round picks. The Celtics have enough young players and projects on the roster already. I don't know that you need to continue to keep adding to those guys. I think that's part of what's put them in this position, having a very inexperienced bench and the like there. And then I would give up Aaron Nesmith or Romeo Langford. Let the Magic pick which one of the 2 young players they like, and then move forward. Does Gordon make Boston a title contender this year? No, he's not going to put them there. But what he does is he puts them in a better position when they get into the playoffs to make more of a difference than they would otherwise. And that's, in this season, I think, more important than ever. There is no Golden State Warriors hanging out there where you're making kind of every move is in relation to can we beat the Warriors or not. There's not that juggernaut team out there that you're going to beat. My Boston accent just slipped out there pretty good. There's not that team that you're really going to be trying to take down. So I think what really ends up happening is the folks get into things as they want to put themselves in the position to be the best version that they can be. And I think Gordon does that. He unlocks their ability to go back to very switchable lineups because he can play the 4, but he can also guard the 2 and the 3 very easily and consistently. That is, really important for him. I think those things start to become big for the Celtics because they've been in a position where this year they haven't been able to do that. They've played 2 bigs a lot. When they've played smaller, it's been much smaller lineups that make it hard. So I think that unlocks. And then the last thing I'll say is you bring in Gordon, everybody else kind of pushes down a slot that's behind him, and the whole roster starts to look a lot better and deeper. I know it's one player, but it makes everybody fit just that much better because now guys who were starting maybe move to the bench. Guys who were playing 25 minutes a night off the bench maybe play 10. And all those things start to push down, and those guys all start to look a little bit better because everything makes a lot more sense with the roster construction.
And of course, it's also been rumored that Marcus Smart was leaving town. That one I had a little bit of trouble with because I just don't see the point of taking Smart out of the equation when you're trying to bring Gordon in, who's a good defender. Like, you would want to pair those guys together, especially for their switchability, capabilities. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm just going over this. Like, if you have Marcus Smart at the point, for example, and you have Jalen and Tatum at the wings, you have Gordon at the so-called 4, and then you have Tice playing the big, that's a 5-man switching machine.
Or Robert Williams.
Or Robert Williams, too.
Yep.
There's a lot to like there.
Spot on with that. Yeah, I tweeted that. I said that is, I think what they're kind of dreaming about there is that gives you a defensive lineup. And then if you're on one of those nights where you need more offense, Kemba Walker closes, right? And Smart probably doesn't in that. Or Smart closes still and Gordon doesn't close. Or you go super small and you don't play with a big at all. We know they did that at times when it was Gordon Hayward. It didn't really work because Hayward wasn't big enough. It fell often to Jaylen Brown to defend the opposing 5. If that's able to be something that Aaron Gordon can do, that makes a lot more sense. So I think this one feels more real than a lot of the other things we've heard because of just it's one of those things where it makes an awful lot of sense, and you have from the other side the player now known to be on the market. I had someone tell me today he will not be on the Magic. Really, we can now say it by this time tomorrow, because it's about 3:30 on Wednesday. So trade deadline is at 3 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. So by this time tomorrow, Aaron Gordon will not be back on the Magic. And now that's not really a surprise, I think, at this point.
No, I would agree with that. So from the Boston perspective, we're going to stick with Gordon a little bit because he's also rumored to the Denver Nuggets. But before we do that, let's just stick with Boston for a minute because the Harrison Barnes rumors, while they've cooled a little bit in the media over the past couple of days, they haven't died out. Like, they are still floating around a little bit. So if you are the Celtics and you end up having your pick of Aaron Gordon or Harrison Barnes, do you go with Gordon or do you go with the offensive upside of Harrison Barnes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think before I answer it, I'll walk you through a little bit of my thought process on that. Is Barnes is a much more known. We know Barnes can fit in as a fourth or fifth guy on a really good team. We've seen him do that, right? That was what he was as he kind of came to prominence. So we know he can do that. He's in a lot of ways, he's still kind of doing that now as probably a third guy in on the Kings. So yeah, if you ask him to come in and play a supporting role to Tatum, Brown, and Walker, he's definitely able to do that. The reason why I'll say... I like Harrison Barnes. I think he'd be a wonderful fit. I will go with Aaron Gordon, though. He's younger. I think he's about 3 years younger than Barnes, if I remember correctly. And there is a sense that we have not seen from Aaron Gordon what he is as an idealized player yet. Because he's been... almost since after we got past his rookie year, he's been Orlando's first or second option a lot. Vucevic clearly has grown into becoming the first option. At best, Gordon has been maybe the third option during his time in Orlando, and I think that's a role he's miscast for. But if you can get him in the right place where he really becomes the a guy who is your fourth option, or maybe even your fifth option, you start to look at it and say, boy, you probably have a pretty good team, and then you may see Gordon really kind of explode. Yeah, maybe his overall numbers come down, but his efficiency and everything else that really matters, that's probably going to go way up. So that's why I would lean towards Aaron Gordon. Plus, it seems like the cost is a little bit less for him than it would be to go get Harrison Barnes at this point, because all indications are the Kings don't really want to move Harrison Barnes very much.
I feel like you're dancing, Keith, around a obvious Draymond Green comparison.
No, I won't go that far. I know people love to make that one. You know, could Aaron Gordon be Draymond Green? I mean, I think Draymond Green, in a lot of ways, when we go back, he's one of one, right? Yeah. I mean, we're on, you know, guys, you know, they think we're into, you know, seven or eight different guys have come in since Draymond came to prominence, where it's been, you know, well, yeah, they're you know, going to be the next Draymond Green, and none of them have come true, because a guy who's 6 foot six that can anchor your defense on the back line, those guys don't really exist. So, you know, I don't want to go that far, but if you want to go with a poor man's Draymond Green, sure, I'll give you that for Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, like just the archetype of it, like someone who isn't required to be a high volume table setter offensively, but who can focus in on defense, ball handling, opportunistic scoring, that type of player. Which, you know, you could argue Draymond, even with the opportunistic scoring, he's kind of gotten away from that. He's just like, whatever you need. Like, if I get one shot in this game, it's fine. I don't care. Whereas Gordon, I think, is still a little bit more interested in establishing himself offensively as well. But I do think there is a few similarities which I at least find intriguing. Obviously, like you said, one of one for Draymond, but I like the overall fit there as well. If Gordon makes it to the Celtics, I think he could be a major key. And also something we haven't really touched on, I think Gordon, they could be the best thing to happen to his career is to play under Brad Stevens.
I think there's something to that. I think Brad Stevens has, you know, gotten the best out of several players. I mean, he certainly got guys big contracts that they might not have got elsewhere. And I think there is something to that. I think especially, too, if you can put him in a spot where, you know, you're basically saying, hey, what we need you to do is cut. Attack from the weak side when the ball swings to you, and then we need you to occasionally on the second unit do a little bit of ball handling and a little bit of creation on your own. That's what we want out of you, and I think then that you know, starts to be a guy who makes an awful lot of sense there. Hey, it's funny you mentioned, you know, Draymond Green. Is that where I was going? I almost see him as a much bigger, better version of Evan Turner, what he was for the Celtics, a guy who you know, Boston got a lot of mileage of for years and years. I think Gordon is a bigger version of Evan Turner. Matter of fact, I like that so much, I might end up tweeting that later.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. And Turner I will say there's a difference there, because Turner was not someone who could spread the floor all that much. Like, he did most of his damage, I want to say, from like 16 feet and in. So Gordon has that extra offensive layer, I think, that could be intriguing. But the, one of the things, Keith, and we got to talk about this, because he is intriguing, generally speaking, and that's also why the Denver Nuggets are interested. Now, full disclosure, Brian and I have spent years amping up that that fit, because we just want to see him play with Nikola Jokic. And of course, as I mentioned, Brian, we're just going to give a shout out.
Yes.
He is a father now to a beautiful baby boy. And look, it's heartwarming to see all the pictures flooding both on Twitter and in my personal inbox. It's been great. So congratulations, Brian and Alex, well-deserved, beautiful done, beautiful baby. I can't wait to come meet y'all again and see the little bugger. But yeah, so
I'm going to get a Celtics onesie in the mail for him. Started off right.
You know what? I have his address, so let's connect.
let's not do that live on the show.
Yeah, right? No, but let's definitely connect off the air. Let's do that. I want that to happen so bad. But no, so obviously there is that component of Jokic and Gordon, right? I mean, that would be tantalizing, and then you throw Jamal Murray into the equation. I have to assume, however, given that the Nuggets over the past year or so lost a lot of talent, like they lost Jeremy Grant, they lost Malik Beasley, they just lost a lot of talent overall. Do they have to include Michael Porter, right? Can they even facilitate a trade for Gordon without adding in Porter? Would the Magic even be open to that, you think?
I think they might be, because I think what you could do is you could get them to do somebody, like, if you could get them to throw an RJ Hampton, I think that would make the Magic a little more interested. I think Hampton's a guy because I know some see him as a point guard. I still think he's probably going to be an off-ball secondary creator in the NBA, which that fits well with Fultz and Cole Anthony. You've really got a nice trio there of young guards if you could get RJ Hampton. So if you could get RJ Hampton and then a salary match with somebody like Will Barton, maybe, and then get a pick from the Nuggets.
Yeah.
I think that would make a pretty good difference there. The challenge for Denver compared to Boston is, right, Denver has to give up something in salary matching, whereas the Celtics can use the trade exception,
right,
and don't have to go that direction. So it gets a little trickier for Denver, but you know, it's not there. But yeah, I think that could get it done, because I don't think Denver would move Michael Porter for Aaron Gordon. My question is, do Gordon and Porter start to overlap a little bit too much? They're not the same player, because Gordon should be more athleticism and defense, where Porter's more offense and scoring based. But I just wonder, does that get a little tricky fit-wise? But I think Aaron Gordon becomes, you know, your version of what Jeremy Grant was for that team. And as Porter grows into a more primary player for them as an offensive kind of hub, especially when Jokic and Murray aren't in the game, I think you'd make that work just fine.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. If there's a deal to be had there, found there, where the Nuggets do not give up Porter Jr. in that scenario, I mean, that would be absolutely huge. I would agree. I don't see that as a problem. You know, nowadays it's not really threes and fours, it's just like wings and bigs, and most teams, especially the Nuggets, are just so untraditional. I mean, when you really think about it, they're starting a shooting guard at point guard. Their center is, in fact, more or less their de facto point guard anyway, which, I mean, then they have Paul Millsap, who's about 86 million years old, who's still hitting threes, and who is, I don't even know what you can call him, because he still switches around. Like, he can guard threes, he can guard fours, he can guard fives. Mm-hmm. Like, that is just such an unconventional team that I just wouldn't care. Like, positional wise, I wouldn't put any thought into, oh, can this work if Michael Porter is the three or four? Like, I just think you roll them out there. Most of them are totally interchangeable, and that could actually work. Plus, I think it would help Porter Jr. defensively to an insane extent to have Gordon out there to basically take the tougher coverage.
Yeah, you put Porter on the worst guy 3 through 5 probably at that point, right? At least the worst of the two forwards, and let him go. And if you play a bigger shooting guard, whether that be, you know, Gary Harris finding, you know, his game again, which, you know, I'm still hopeful will happen because I was a big Gary Harris fan. You know, maybe you could put Porter on the, you know, worst player out of the 2 through 4 for the opposing team and just kind of hope, you know, he's okay in that role and just hope, you know, you're sticking him on someone who's not a big part of the offense. So, yeah, I think Jokic being such a unique player opens up all sorts of fun lineup construction for Denver because you don't have to play a primary playmaker ball handler with them. That's why they get so much mileage out of Jamal Murray, who is a, you know, a scorer first and foremost. So yeah, Jokic, you know, doing so much there that gives them a lot of cool options.
And switching gears now, Keith, we are going to the Eastern Conference and specifically the Chicago Bulls, because they are open to taking on additional salary by being buyers. They are open to trading Lauri Markkanen. Some of their young guys, especially Kobe White and Markkanen also, have not exactly developed to the extent that they thought they would. So they are looking to maybe change things up. And DeMar DeRozan has been brought up, and just half an hour ago, Boach put them up as candidates as a landing spot for Lonzo Ball. What are we looking at in Chicago here in terms of shakeups?
Yeah, the Bulls are one of the more interesting teams. I've been asking a lot of people what's going on. And, you know, I think if we were having this conversation a month or so ago, man, my Boston accent is coming out today. This is how I know I've talked a lot more. And I'm also very excited because it's when I've talked a lot in a day and I'm fired up. That's when it all comes spilling back out of me. So when I start calling you Mott, you'll know why. but it's... If we were having this conversation a month ago, Thaddeus Young and Tomas Satoransky would have absolutely been guys who would have been like, yeah, they're moving those guys. They're not keeping them. You know, they're going to go. Now, I don't think either one of them is necessarily going anywhere.
Right.
I think Young moving into the starting lineup has really changed a lot of things for the Bulls. It made them a team that it just makes a little bit more sense in the modern game. They were trying to get by with Markkanen and Carter. And I like both of those guys. I just don't know how much I like them together.
Yeah.
So that leads into, are you kind of at a decision point? Could you push it off to the summer? Sure. But you kind of at a decision point of Markkanen or Carter. Because if you've kind of decided those two guys can't be together for you, then it's probably an opportunity to look into one of those two players on the market. I think with Markkanen, and I'll put him in the same category, despite the fact that they're all very different players, him, John Collins, Lonzo Ball, all pending restricted free agents.
Yeah.
What you have to look at is you set your number. And let's just say for Markkanen, let's say it's $18 million a year starting salary. If you're the Bulls, we won't go higher than that. Then what you need to look at is, all right, is there a team out there that you feel like will? And then will you match it? Or will you just sign them to it yourself? And if your answer is no, but you feel like that team is out there, then you probably need to consider moving on from him. Because otherwise, you're just going to put yourself in a messy situation this offseason. And I feel the same way with Collins and Ball. I think Collins and Ball have more value. I would rank the three, Collins, Ball, Markkanen, in terms of how much money I would pay them on their next contracts. But they're all in the same similar situation. You have to know what your walkaway point is. And if you feel like that walkaway point is going to be challenged and stress you in the offseason, you might as well make the move now,
right,
versus getting to that point of, all right, now we just lost this guy for nothing. Yeah, you can always spin it and work it into a sign and trade, but I think people have gone a little too far with those and just assume, well, that's what you do. You never lose anybody for nothing now. And that does happen more than it ever has, because teams will pay a second round pick for the flexibility and all the things that go with that. But I think that's where you have to be if you're the Bulls. After that, Levine's not going anywhere, I don't think. I think they're pretty comfortable with him. It'd be also, what a kick in the face of, hey, let's trade a guy who is an all-star. You know, that's not very good. Clearly, Patrick Williams is not going anywhere. Kobe White's not going anywhere yet. I think Kobe White could be, you know, a guy who could be maybe a little interesting in the offseason, especially if you're going to stick with Levine and you've decided they don't necessarily work great together. And then Otto Porter Jr., I think that's just a matter of, does anybody want that contract? Sure, give us something. Otherwise, I think there's a potential maybe they buy him out. But I think the Bulls are probably going to most likely just stand pat, roll this in, get into the play-in, be competitive, and kind of spin it as, hey, we took a step forward this year. We were in the mix for the playoffs, which is something they haven't been able to say for a number of years.
Yeah. So we actually know the numbers now for Markkanen, because before, or actually after the start of the season, so that means after the period wherein the Bulls and Markkanen negotiated and didn't find common ground, Casey Johnson of NBC Chicago said they were about $4 million apart per year. And the other day, Jake Fisher from Sports Illustrated came out and said that the Bulls were offering him $15 million a year. So simple math says that Markkanen is looking for $19 million annually, which, you know, technically 20 when you look at it, very close to it at the very least. And I probably would not, or, you know, I'm actually being way too kind here. I would not pay Lauri Markkanen that amount of money. I think he's very one-dimensional. I would feel much more comfortable paying that amount to the two other candidates you brought up, in John Collins and Lonzo Ball. Ball, of course, is being rumored to Chicago as well. I think if there's a deal to be had there, it between Markkanen and Ball, of course Chicago would have to attach something else. I would probably, from Chicago's point of view, feel more at ease, I think, paying Ball in that area of $20 million as opposed to paying Markkanen $19 million. Am I crazy, or is that fair?
No, I think that's fair, and I'm not a big Lonzo Ball guy. I think if you believe in the shooting as being real, where he's at now, yeah, absolutely, that's what I would pay. Lonzo Ball, I would have no problem with that. I you know, no issue at all, right? It's I think that's gonna be, regardless of if you want to or not, that's going to be what you have to pay him. Someone's going to give him $20 million a year, because you have to also factor in Lonzo Ball. Not that this has a lot of benefit to Chicago, but to other teams, maybe Chicago a little bit. He's a guy who very casual fans still know. So he's a guy you can market as, you know, this is a marquee signing, big major addition to our team. And he's just a name people know. But the nice thing is his game is starting to grow into that a little bit as well. Whereas before, I was like, this guy's gonna get wildly overpaid because of this vision of something he could be versus the last 4 years of what he actually has been. But this year, he's taken major tangible steps forward towards being a different player and a productive player. And I think he's now a guy, if we had this conversation, I'd be like, he can't fit with Zach LaVine. He's going to be off the ball too much and it's going to be a mess. But I think this year has really proven, all right, he can do some stuff off the ball, and I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, they might not be done. Let's say they do a deal centered around Markkanen and Lonzo Ball. You brought up Otto Porter Jr.'s major contract as well. DeRozan is being rumored. Maybe they go all in on a half-year rental of DeRozan. I mean, that would be a half-year rental of Otto Porter as well. Both are expiring. You would have to attach some draft compensation. You would definitely have to attach value to Porter going out in any trade to the Spurs for DeRozan. But if they suddenly field a roster of Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, Patrick Williams, DeMar DeRozan, and then Wendell Carter Jr. for the rest of the year, plus Thaddeus Young coming off the bench, and Sato for that matter, I mean, then we could be looking at the Bulls not even going into the play-in tournament, but actually getting a solidified playoff seed.
Yeah, I think in theory we could, and I'm not picking on the Bulls here. I think this was with any team. If a team's kind of doing a remake of their roster that's that dramatic, right, where you're changing several players and the roles then for the guys who kind of are the left-behind players or the right remaining players, it's really hard this year because there's just no practice time. It's just game travel, game, travel, game, travel, or game, recovery, game, recovery. You know, Boston right now is in the middle of a 5-game and 7-night stretch. Every team in the league has those. Nobody has those practice days. So that is something that I was talking with folks around the league. They said that is a worry, is if you're doing one of these, if you're doing a trade where it's 3 or 4 players for one, or you're doing, you know, 3 different trades where you're doing something big, or you're sending out four guys and bringing four guys in. Is this type of season the right year to do that? Because of you're just going to have to do it on fly in games and really say, well, we're just going to have to figure it out. If it means a couple more losses, it means a couple more losses. Now, because the Bulls are in the Eastern Conference, where absolutely everyone refuses to create any sort of separation, 4 through 10, maybe they're fine, you know, if they wanted to do something like that. That's where it gets interesting. It's funny that you brought up DeMar DeRozan, because another guy I historically have not been, you know, the biggest fan in the world of, but I like the way he's changed his game in San Antonio. I like that he's kind of embraced this kind of playmaking forward role now there. And he's still, you know, I mean, the guy's still a lethal scorer. He's just not the lethal scorer the way people want him to be in the modern game, where it's threes and free throws. He still gets a lot of it done in the mid-range, but it's not like the Bulls would lack for, you know, outside shooting on that group. It could get a little funky, because if Markkanen's not there, you know, you've removed, you know, the kind of best stretch big option on the team. But yeah, it would be something I would get interested in. Again, if it was for Porter only, and Porter and maybe some kind of super minor asset, sure, why not, you know, strengthen your push. I think the bigger challenge on that side comes is, I don't think San Antonio wants to do that, because I think San Antonio, other than LaMarcus Aldridge, is basically in on the roster that they have of, hey, we're going to, you know, make a playoff run with this group. And the bottom of the West, the records are better than they are in the East, but it's still this, you know, kind of jumbled mess, and the Spurs are right in the mix with everybody.
Do you think if the Spurs are basically standing pat in that sense, that they would be very open to a DeMar DeRozan return in the summer? Because otherwise you could make the argument, of course, that if he's an upcoming free agent, and they could lose him for nothing, getting nothing in return. So if they trade him now, they would at least get some sort of value back. Are we looking at a situation where DeRozan could be a Spur for the long haul?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, ideally for them, you're probably, what you would like to see is, if you're not going to use, you know, a ton of cap space in the offseason, and they can get to so much of it anyway, so you could still re-sign DeMar DeRozan. So I think what you could be looking at is, you know, if you wanted to give him, kind of like what Kyle Lowry's reportedly looking at, is 2 years and $50 million. If you wanted to give DeRozan a two-year $50 million contract this offseason, I don't know that I'd have a ton of problem with that, yeah, with the way he's played. And it's a known quantity, right? Right? And it's never a bad thing, you know, to go into your season with a known quantity, when that known quantity is at least a somewhat quality player.
Right, right. Well, I think it's interesting to both look at, you know, the Spurs and the Bulls situations, like, respectively, because both of them also want to win. Like, the Spurs are definitely not tankers. The Bulls are desperate to get back into the swing of things instead of being, you know, picking seventh perpetually. I know that joke doesn't work anymore, but I had to use it. And I think that could also be just one of those things where a deal just doesn't get done, because both of them are going to be looking at each other like, okay, so you want the best player. Yeah. Well, we want to win too. Oh, okay. And then because of that, because they have the same target, they just do not get anything done in that capacity, because obviously both are competitive.
Yeah, and that's, you know, a thing I think is, you know, definitely true right now. And I think that's true for a lot of teams this year, is I think a lot of these teams, it may almost be paralysis by, are we ruining what we've already got and what we've kind of already built here? And when I look at the East, especially, teams like the Hawks, Knicks, Hornets, Bulls, those teams haven't been relevant in a while. Right. So now this is a chance to get into the playoffs, get into the play-in mix, whatever it is. You know, and if you're, you know, let's I'm going to be positive Celtics guy here for a minute. If the Celtics and Heat eventually move up and they're in the 4, 5, 6 range, and then your play-in is Knicks, Hornets, Bulls, Pacers, or let's say the Hawks slide back there, I don't think you can feel confident saying, oh, it doesn't matter that you know, the Bulls made the play and they can't possibly beat, you know, whoever it is. I think even the 10th seed there would have the chance of winning the two games it takes to move on. Right. So I think that's what could drive these teams to say, you know, we're in a pretty good place right now. Do we need to really risk, you know, doing something that upsets the apple cart? And that's where looking for the perfect move, you know, can keep you from making a move that's plenty good enough. I used to have a boss who used to say one of the best quotes I love, I still use it today, is perfect is the enemy of good. And I think that is, you know, absolutely true. Mm.
So let's get into the Kyle Lowry situation, Keith, because he is being rumored both to Philly and Miami. It seems that consensus is growing that he's not going to stick around Toronto. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think there is definitely something to that. I think this is probably by mutual consensus. Both sides are reaching the logical conclusion of it's probably time to go in different directions. Not in a bad way, but just, you know, right. You still want to win, and we're probably not there right now.
So what is the most logical destination for him of the two, Philadelphia and Miami? I mean, obviously he's from Philadelphia, so there is that connection there, but he's also great friends with Jimmy Butler, who obviously plays in Miami. They play a style and a brand of basketball which is also just tailored to his mentality and tenacity. So if you're just looking at the best possible fit, which organization do you go to, both mentally, on court-wise? Like, what's the pick here if it comes down to it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to what do they have to give to get him. And I think the Heat can get him without having to give up major rotation pieces a little bit easier, because they have the contracts they can throw in towards salary matching just a little bit easier than the 76ers can. 76ers, it has to be Danny Green, right? There's no other logical way you can get there. And Danny Green has become, you know, a key starter for that team. He's their best wing defender on the roster right now, outside of Simmons. But Simmons is just such a jack of all trades defender. I don't necessarily put him in that group. Matisse Thybulle is there, but is he ready to do that at a championship level as a second year player? I'm not sure of that. So it's going to have to be Green, I would imagine, Tyrese Maxey, and then whatever else you got to do for salary matching, Mike Scott, Terrence Ferguson, however you build it up there to get to that $30 million. And then maybe a pick has to go too. If that's Toronto can drive a little bit of a bidding war. I don't know. Then I want to know what's Philly's companion move to fill out the depth they've now lost. Right. That's where I worry about with them. Where with the Heat, if you're talking, I would assume Toronto needs to come away with Duncan Robinson or Tyler Hero, ideally, in this, unless they're really just kind of saying, man, we're going to give them away. If they're, and if they're going to do that, well, then Philly's math changes a little bit on it. If we just went to end result teams, I think it's probably Philadelphia, because I think they need what he can bring them a little bit more than Miami does. I think Miami has enough guys who can do things off the dribble and also hit open jump shots, where Philly, that still feels like they're lacking that second creator off the bounce behind Simmons. Still, I like Shake Milton. I like what Maxey's done. But let's be real, Tyrese Maxey's not even always in the rotation. You know, he's still, when everybody's healthy, he generally does not play for them. So that is so I think he would be, fill a much bigger need for Philadelphia, and I think you could get by with cobbling together a wing rotation without Danny Green in it.
Yeah, I think your Shake Milton point as well, like when coming to that, because I see a lot of Sixers guys kind of paint him as a point guard. I see Milton as like almost a clear two, and I realize positions are outdated, but I don't see him as like a primary ball handler. I see him as some guy who needs to be unleashed offensively in a, I won't gonna go with this comparison of Norman Powell, because Powell is significantly better, but in terms of similar playing style, someone who isn't primarily on the ball, but someone who can create off the dribble here and there, but also spot up and be like an offensive production guy instead of being a table setter. So I think if you get Kyle Lowry in there and you somehow keep Milton around, that would free him up to play a more, I kind of want to say, optimized role.
Yeah, I think Shake Milton becomes, then he's like a poor man's Jordan Clarkson. right, where it's, you know, put him on your second unit and just let him go create for himself to create offense, because that's what he is right now. He creates shots for himself. He doesn't create shots for others. The only guy on that team that really creates shots for others on a regular basis is Ben Simmons. You know, they just don't have those playmakers. Everybody else is a scorer first on Philadelphia's roster. Clearly, it's fine. It's worked. You know, they're one of the better teams in the NBA. But I think when you get into the playoffs, you need one more guy who can drive and kick, one more guy who can drive and drop to Embiid or Harris at the rim or whoever it is. And I think Lowry fits that a little better, where a guy like Shake Milton, he's driving looking to score himself. He's not looking to set anybody else up. It's not a criticism, because you absolutely need guys like that too. So I'm with you. I think that it rebalances their roster a little bit, but then it also, again, kind of that point I made with Boston, when you make a really smart, good trade, then everybody else slots into a role that makes a little bit more sense for them.
Yep.
Everything just looks quite a bit better.
I think there's also, this isn't really about on-court fit or destination, but I think it's what the Toronto Raptors are doing right now with Lowry and basically sitting down and trying to work together to find the best possible solution moving forward. I think that's kind of GMing 101 these days, right? And just in terms of also making sure that you're taking care of your guy, that you, when you leave a certain situation, there's no need for burning bridges. Like, you leave as friends, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
Because that just matters so much, not just to players, but to agents and the reputation that you build as an NBA organization. So for the Raptors to actually, I mean, let's be honest here, they don't want to lose Kyle Lowry. If it was up to them, they would love to hang on to Kyle for another few years and have him retire as a Raptor. That would definitely be very high on their list. But they're just recognizing we're not where we need to be. We understand that you have championship aspirations, and we're going to listen to those feelings that you have. We're going to take them seriously. We're going to work with you. We're going to work with your agent to try to figure out a solution that's best for you, where you can kind of pick where you want to go. I think that is just setting such a professional tone that if you don't do that as an NBA general manager or team president or whatever nowadays, you're a dinosaur.
Yeah, 100%. This is you are maybe the best Raptor in franchise history, right? You can make arguments for DeRozan or Bosch or, you know, maybe Vince Carter, but for me, it's Lowry. You know, he's been the guy who's been there. You won a championship, you know, with us. You delivered us something that can never be taken away. And I think now if it's right for you and us to do the right thing, I don't think they would just up and trade Kyle Lowry. I think this is going to be done in conjunction with him. Of, you know, hey, well, you know, they're not going to send, I'm going to pick on Charlotte here for a minute, but they're not going to send Kyle Lowry to Charlotte, right? And just be like, there you go, you know, or salary dump him on the Thunder or anything like that, right? They're not going to do that. He's meant too much to them. But if it is they're also not going to trade him just to trade him and take back garbage, right? That's not going to happen either. So if it's, you know, hey, the right deal is here for us, it gets you to a place where you want to be, a place where you can continue to chase championships and be the guy you've always been, that's just smart business. Once you get kind of past the point of no return with your season, and I think Toronto, unfortunately, may be there now, this is the best thing you can do for your player and your franchise. And you hit the nail on the head. Players, agents, they remember this, and they remember these things later. So next time around, when it comes time to, you know, hey, you know, they really took care of that guy, they love those guys up there, they will, you know, that'll get remembered, and that'll help you in future negotiations down the line. And for where Toronto's headed, that's going to be really, really important over the next couple of years, because it looks clearly like they're starting at least a soft rebuild around the guarantee guys of Siakam, VanVleet, and Ananobi. Then I think everybody else, let's see what happens with them on the roster.
So you brought him up here, and you just basically locked him in as a long-term core member. But I have to ask you, Keith, and I apologize, Raptors fans, I just have to. It's in my invisible contract to ask this. Could we see a shock trade, including where Pascal Siakam is involved?
You know, it got out for some reason that they fined him. I don't think Shams missed on that. I know the Raptors have kind of refuted it and said it didn't happen, and that's because it's more of a when the league finds somebody, there's note of it. It goes in the league press release. There's all sorts of stuff, and we know team fines don't always get out, and they happen more than I think the average person knows. And they went all the way to the max you can fine a player for a single transgression of $50,000. I know that sounds like it's nothing, and it really, Pascal Siakam's not going to miss that money. But that's the max you can fine a player for one single thing. So I think as we look at this, it is that makes it slightly more likely. Maybe it takes it to 5 to 10% they would do something. And I always say never count out Masai Ujiri. If there's a guy who will step up and take a home run swing, it's him. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to happen. But if in the next 10 minutes we get a Woj bomb that Siakam got traded and it was, rolled into, some deal that's really setting them up for the future better, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because Masai's just not a guy who's afraid to make a move like that.
Right. So that comes down to opportunity instead of personnel, at least current. And yeah.
No, it's funny, Mort. I just got to break in. Right as I finished saying that, I saw our Twitter notification pop up, and I was like, no way. But it wasn't. It's about coronavirus testing, which, good news. The numbers are down. but I almost died. I was like, if that just happened, I'm done. It's never going to get better than that.
That would have been fantastic. That would have been, if we had just discussed a complete out of left field Woj bomb and we'd gotten that, and with the player included, I would just have retired. That would have been it. Right? but okay, so let's say that Siakam stays. You're probably looking at also moving off of Norman Powell, because he's got a player option. I think it's 11.6 million or something along those lines. He's been playing so well over the past 2 years now, really, that there's just no chance in hell that he picks that up. He's going to decline that, and he's going to become an unrestricted free agent this offseason. And I think it at least behooves the Raptors to look at what he can fetch, because you're just not sure that you can re-sign him in the summer. Maybe someone out there takes a huge swing on him because of his offensive production and the fact that he's a very stable defender. What should the Raptors do here, Keith?
I don't remember who it is, so I apologize. I can't give the proper credit. But somebody said he's going to get $20 million this offseason, and I think that's great chance that comes to pass, because I think with Norman Powell, it's free agent values are always based on two things: how good the player is, or three things: how good the player is, how many teams have cap space, and what's the competition like. Well, there's a good amount of teams with cap space. Norman Powell's a good player, and the free agent class stinks. He may be one of the better unrestricted free agents on the market. And that's even including, because even if Kawhi's unrestricted, I think we all know he's probably going back to the Clippers, or at least right. That's what we assume at this point. So I think, what it comes down to, it's almost like the conversation with the restricted guys. If you're the Raptors, you're like, well, you don't want to pay this guy $20 million. We just gave Van Vliet that much. We got Siakam on the big deal. We just re-signed Ananobi. Ananobi's, the good thing is he signed a very team-friendly extension, so I think that could work in their benefit as they build out the roster the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. But you have to look at it. If you're not willing to pay him that, then I think what you have to really consider is, all right, can we move him and get something nice moving forward? And there's an awful lot of teams, I think, that really like Norman Powell, and a lot of places where he could fit really, really well. So I think this is an opportunity for Toronto to get a fairly decent return if that's the direction they want to go.
I'm probably of the opinion with Powell that because he's improved so much in back-to-back years, I kind of fear, like, ruling him out as basically saying, oh, now he's a finished product right now. Like, guys who make these leaps continuously, there's always a risk as well. Like, if you go, oh, he's 27, you look at the age, and you say, there's no chance in hell.
He's almost 28.
He's almost 28. But, like, some guys just have this tendency, to get better at that age. And look, over the first 4 years of his career, it wasn't really the minutes that banked him up. Like, he's only played 7,000 career minutes. So he's got fresh legs still. There's just a lot of growth from last year to this year. And even last year, he was a hot topic. Like, we all talked about him being one of the most improved guys in the NBA. And it seems like he's, well, not one of those candidates right now. Jeremy Grant has that thing on lock. But he's taken that additional step. So I have to also think that for the Raptors' point of view, there's that little lingering thought in the back of their heads going, what if? What if he took another step next year? What if now where he's like a fringe 20-point scorer, what if next year he comes back, he's a 24?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you know what else I think, too, with him is his as his counting stats have improved, as his role has grown over the last three seasons, his efficiency has stayed fairly stable and pretty good. You know, he's just under 50% again this year overall as a shooter. He's at 43% from three, but the last 2 years are essentially 40% years from three. That's always, you know, really good to see as the attempts go up that he's maintaining because a lot of times we know, right, as a guy's role increases, it's kind of the Jeremy Grant factor, right? The efficiency might start to go down a little bit. But yeah, I that's why I feel good. I keep saying anybody who wants to throw, you know, 20 million or more at Victor Oladipo, you might as well give that money to Norman Powell, because I think you're getting yourself a better player.
And just to back up with that up with some numbers, over the past two seasons so far, he's played 93 games. And in that time span, he has a true shooting percentage of 63.3. And this is a 6'4" shooting guard who takes a lot of three-pointers. So that's, of course, that plays into it as well, but it means he's hitting them, which is really important. So you brought up Victor Oladipo, Keith. Let's wrap up our podcast by talking about Oladipo, because it looks like he will be playing on his third team this season by the end of tomorrow.
I don't know, man. It's not going to be the Rockets.
Right.
Woj kind of said the Knicks aren't really in there because they don't want to give up a good asset for Oladipo, but the Knicks have two first-round picks this year. They're both going to be kind of middle of the first round, later first round, probably more depending on where they both finish, because they have theirs in Dallas. So that's a good opportunity to get a really, you know, pretty good pick. A lower pick than what they might have been expected to be, especially their own pick. It's anytime a team has, I like to call it a bonus pick, which isn't it's not a great pick that they wouldn't move when it's when it's an extra pick around their own pick. I always look at it as, well, do you need to bring in two more rookies? I mean, this Knicks team is already relatively young there, so I think it is I think it really comes down to if you're the Knicks and you wanted to go get Oladipo, are you going to keep him after this year or not? Because I don't know that you want to just go into this with just, giving up anything good for a, half season rental in the playoffs. I know it's important to make the playoffs. I don't know if it's quite that important for them. So if it's not the Knicks, I don't know, because I just don't know if the Heat are going to do it now. The one benefit for the Heat, if they really are wanting to get him in the offseason, one benefit about doing it now is then you don't have to renounce everybody, clear everybody out from getting all those guys moved off your books to sign him as a free agent. You can almost pull the pre-agency approach and go get him now, and then maybe keep a couple of the other guys, bird rights and the like, to make re-signing them a little bit easier, or just keeping them on the team options you have already, or something like that. So my guess is it's going to be the Heat or the Knicks, because I just don't know who else is going to emerge. But maybe his market becomes a really crazy surprise that comes out of nowhere.
I mean, I think it would be a wet dream for Houston if it ended up being a bidding war between the Heat and the Knicks. So, but I mean, you said it. Like, the Knicks are apparently not as enthused about giving up a significant piece, which, honestly, I see that as a new level of maturity for their point of view, because they used to, back in the day, like, they would trade someone for a good word.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, this would have been done. Would have been done a week ago.
Yeah.
If this was a couple years ago, for sure.
Exactly. So the fact that they're actually staying back a little bit and saying, well, we would like to have him on there, but it needs to be for the right price. I think that's really a step in the right direction. We also saw it in the last offseason with the Knicks, right? They didn't panic. They didn't go out and make any splashy moves. They took a slow approach to the offseason, and they said, look, we just have a bunch of young guys. They need to get developed, and we need to get them acclimated with Tibbs. We still have Julius Randle. We still have a couple pieces, and we know how the Randle story turned out really well. But yep. they have just taken this very, very mature approach to team building that we haven't seen in years, and I expect that to continue when it comes to Oladipo. I don't think they'll panic, and that could mean that there simply isn't a competitive market for him. Mm-hmm. Which means, again, that the Rockets could end up having to accept something that might not be as attractive as they were hoping for.
Yeah, I think if you're the Rockets, you aren't, this is not a, you know, I guess, going to accept, you know, junk for Victor Oladipo.
Right.
I think it really becomes, the idea is, I am, you know, you're kind of in the take it or leave it phase. To some extent, where it is, let's get you, you know, let's go get something done so we just don't lose this guy for nothing, because he's clearly not coming back. So that's going to be the big thing that you got to be focused on is, all right, can we get something without, you know, giving up a whole heck of a lot? Then I think that is, you know, what becomes really important if you are the Rockets. And that's where I think, you know, even the Knicks, you know, even if the Knicks took, because remember, the Knicks could add protections to their own pick. They could add protections to the Dallas pick,
right?
Because that's allowed now. So even if you added some protections to it and said, you know, all right, top 20. Yeah, I think for the Knicks, you know, if you did the rest of your cap space plus Alec Burks, and you know, top 20 first round pick for Victor Oladipo, that's worth it. Even if you didn't re-sign him, you know, all right, well, I mean, you're going to have to spend some of that cap space anyway to hit the salary floor. So why not spend it on a guy that I think, you know, could maybe make a difference for you, you know, being in a pretty good place heading into the playoffs.
Yeah. Plus, Tibbs is going to fight for him. Like, right now, I'm imagining Tibbs is just hammering his big hands onto a table saying, get me Victor Oladipo, he plays defense.
Yeah. Yeah. That part of the question, how much defense he plays, but
right.
But I also wonder, you know, is Victor Oladipo in a position where, as long as he's feeling good, are we seeing, you know, everything he can do right now? Because I don't know that maybe that's not really the case. So I think we could see him, look a little bit better in his next destination.
So right before we close everything up here, Keith, do you have any final rumors, notes, thoughts that you want to share about the trade deadline, something you want to see? I don't want to end it up like Vogue and Lowe going all fake trade at the very end, but I am inviting you to share maybe a trade that you would like to see, maybe something that you would find fascinating. Just the floor is yours.
Just selfishly, I want the Celtics to do something so I don't have to hear about it.
Yeah.
For the next, you know, month or more, probably more. So I'd like them to do something. Doesn't even need to be something big, just something. I think it's going to be a very busy trade deadline. I set the over-under on the NBA front office show podcast that I do with Trevor Lane at 10 deals. I don't think they're all going to be blockbusters, but I think there'll be some small ones in there. We'll see some salary dumps based around the luxury tax and things like that to lower the bill or get out of the tax entirely. So I think we're definitely going to see some of that stuff. So I feel good. We're going to get a pretty good busy trade deadline between this time tomorrow. I'll just put this out there as a reminder. 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, Thursday, is the trade deadline. But just right at 3 doesn't mean you won't get deals or deal details. You know, past that, teams just have to have their trade call in the queue with the NBA at 3 o'clock. What I'm really hoping for, Mort, is a repeat of, I believe it was 2015, when Woj tweeted, "Good Lord." At right after 3 o'clock. That's what I want. But that's what I want every single year. I want madness, chaos. I want to be, you know, looking at my salary sheets and get a tear in my eye of how much work I have to do on those things.
I did a live stream that year, and I remember vividly nothing was happening for the first hour and a half.
All day, yeah.
And then over a 20-minute period, the world just fell apart.
Yep. Yeah, it was bananas. That's what I always hope for, is it just goes absolutely chaos tomorrow. I would prefer, though, if everything, like, if, you know, we all shut it down around, you know, midnight, 1 p.m. Eastern, and then, you know, we get back at it around 9 a.m. Eastern in the morning. And that generally tends to be how it goes. I just, you know, I don't need the phone waking the whole family up in the middle of the night, you know, because some deal went down at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, welcome to my life. That's how I function in the summer during free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how, you know, I have nothing but respect for all you guys, because I don't know how you guys do it.
We don't, Keith. It's called drugs. that was a joke, kids. All right, that's a good place to wrap up. Thanks to everyone for listening today. As a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. We're also on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, and leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Morten Jensen, and I was joined by Keith Smith. Keith, enjoy the NBA trade deadline, my friend. It is Christmas once again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Morten. Y'all stay safe, you and yours.
Same for you, Keith. Later, man.